Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, that beginning is as frantic as it was yesterday at the Emirates. Yet another comeback in a North London derby at the Emirates in North London. It's the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport Radio. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Gunnerstown, Dave Seager and Giles Anyam. Have you calmed down, fellas?
Yes. Ready to talk about it.
The adrenaline is finally worn off.
My back is absolutely killing me.
Your back?
Yeah.
What happened?
All weekend we've been, my family's been doing a sort of a 2-day event, and then in between that period I told the family between 2 and 7 I'm off to the North London derby. And then I shot back over to the event and didn't finish up till midnight, and I've done my back in lifting heavy furniture. So
in between a big family event, you squeezed in the North London
you
derby.
You have to. I mean, there's nothing else to do, is there? I wasn't going to miss it. Not this one.
I can't remember the last time I missed one.
Oh, really? When do you reckon it was the last time you missed a North London derby?
Home.
At home.
Crikey. Boy, it's a long time. It would only have been if I was on holiday or something in August, but I don't think we've played them that early in the season for as long as I can remember. Yeah. So certainly, yeah, but probably 7 or 8 years, I reckon, since I've missed one.
So, fellas, listen, let's talk about the game itself. At 2-0 down at half-time, 2-1 down at half-time, but when you were 2-0 down, what was going through your mind?
Oh, no.
Did you really think that? Because watching it, I thought, Arsenal are going to get back into this.
We started off really well. We started off really, really brightly for the first 10, 15 minutes. But what worried me was Tottenham's... That front three are very dynamic. They're very fluid. Mm-hmm. And they kept on getting in down the sides. You know, Son was like finding space between our right back and our right centre-half. And you could see Pochettino... I got home and I watched a match of the day, and they even highlighted it. Pochettino was... Every time they were getting a counter-attack, he was motioning, get it down to Son on the right. And there was loads of space. So as the half progress, I was getting more and more worried by their counter-attacking ability.
It doesn't seem I would have thought Socrates was a good talker. You know, if you said to me, reaction, is he a good talker, I would say yes. But there doesn't seem to be a huge amount of communication between him and Maitland-Niles.
No.
He's the experienced pro. He should be telling Maitland-Niles. He should be pulling him in. I mean, it's like Lee Dixon used to say, you know, in the first 20 minutes of a big game, you should never have more than 5 metres between the back, you know, and just basic stuff like that. And I mean, it's easy to be unfair to Maitland-Niles because obviously he isn't traditionally a right back, but he's had a long time playing there now.
Do you think it's instructional? Because Kolasinac was also really far up the field. I mean, we were pushing really high up, high line, and then the two that they were providing our width, because the two, I suppose, wing forwards were kind of playing inside wing forwards. And I just thought that maybe that was instructional.
Well,
we took our chances.
Well, if it's instructional, then Torreira has to be the deepest of the three, doesn't he? Because he's the most mobile.
And he wasn't.
And Xhaka was. So if you're going to play your fullbacks high, you've got to have a proper DM. Yeah. And Xhaka is not a proper DM.
Yeah. I think he's got... I can
talk about Xhaka for the whole show.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to get onto that. Gary Neville had quite a few words to say during the game as well. We're going to talk about the starting 11 later in the show. We've got Adrian Kajumba from the Daily Mail. He was at the game. He's going to come on to discuss just what it was like being in the press box there. Some transfers, of course. Some transfer talk, it looks like. Henrik Mkhitaryan is off to Roma. Still been no official report, though.
It was confirmed during the last hour, yeah.
Oh, OK. Well, there we go.
From their Twitter account, from Roma's Twitter account.
Right, but nothing from Arsenal yet, which is bizarre. Yeah. And also, some varying reports as to whether there's an option or an obligation to buy. Some outlets are saying there isn't one, and some are saying that there are. So we'll get into that and then talk a bit more about what else is coming up after the international break. But that starting 11, fellas, what were your thoughts on that?
I was surprised that Willock sat out that game. I was surprised Ceballos. Oh, no, actually, I wasn't surprised Ceballos sat out the game, considering his performance against Liverpool. I was a bit surprised that Willock sat out the game, to be honest with you. I wasn't surprised he went with a three, but I just think any combination we have of a three or a double pivot just is not effective enough. I don't think. I think the two boys, Willock and Guendouzi, they're young. They're still growing. Guendouzi's still growing. You know, in that first half, I thought he kind of passed him by a bit. He passed well, but you know, it was a massive undertaking for him. I thought Xhaka in that DM role, as Dave said, it just didn't work. It just doesn't work. He's not mobile enough. I know why he's in there, because he's a unit. He gives us a bit of height. He's a good passer, but defensively, I think there's too many holes in his game.
I think we're worryingly looking at another Vermaelen situation. Mm. I think Emery's made Xhaka his main man. Mm. He's captain on the field.
And you drop him.
And he's finding it hard to drop him. I think if he wants to play 4-3-3, Shaka's not. If he's going to play 4-2-3-1, I can handle Xhaka and Torreira. If he's going to play 4-3-3, he's got to have more creativity and pace in that midfield. And it has to be Ceballos, Guendouzi and Torreira for me. He has made brave decisions. I just think he's wedded himself to Xhaka for some reason.
Do you think...
Go on. Just in terms of the fact that he went with that three up top, so you had your Pepe, your Lacazette and Aubameyang. The argument is there, right, to suggest if he's going to do that for the first time, that he's basically been more cautious in midfield, which is why you had Torreira and Guendouzi starting with Xhaka. It wasn't until Lacazette came off and you brought on Mkhitaryan and Ceballos that you had a bit more creativity in midfield. But starting with those three up top, does he have to be more cautious in midfield?
No, I don't think so. I just think Ceballos has to play because he's the creativity. Mm. And also, I know we just tweeted about this between ourselves because I've seen a lot of people and it really winds me up and I know it. Well, I've just seen that it was. Guendouzi is not holding midfield play. Yeah. He's never been holding midfield play. He's not a defensive midfield player. He's a box-to-box midfielder. And I don't know why people think, he started with three defensive midfield players. No, he hasn't. He started with one defensive midfield player, one pressing midfield player, and a box-to-box midfield player. I just think it's the wrong combination, Shaq. Mm. I just think there has to be more creativity if you're going to keep those three up. It's got to be mobile, but one of them's got to be a creator.
Do you think he is wedded? I mean, he spoke really well of Xhaka after the game. He made one or two mistakes, but you know he was really proud of his performance. So do you think he's just saying? I don't get the impression that he's just saying it to please the crowd. I think he wants to believe in Xhaka.
No, I don't.
I think he wants to believe in Xhaka.
I think we're in a situation like we were with Ozil. If it's a slow game and we're not being pressed, he can. He's like Arteta used to be. He can dictate a game. Mm. His passing's good enough. His vision's good enough. It's just when it's a derby and it's hurly-burly or when we're playing against one of the top sides, he's just not mobile enough. And Torreira has to be. I know Torreira can press well, but if we're going to play in the three, he's got to be the one who's sitting in front of the back four.
I don't like him in advanced or wide positions. I like him at the base. That's where he made his name at Sampdoria. That's where he's best deployed. That's where we should be playing.
But they played with a two with Pryor playing further forward, didn't they? He's gone to Leicester now. So I don't know. I was very surprised. I thought he would go 4-2-3-1. I thought Pepe and Aubameyang would start wide, but I thought Ozil or Ceballos would come in the 10 row, and I thought we'd start with the double pivot. I really did.
I thought they would go with the front three. I wasn't surprised he went with the front three. And I expected it.
Yeah, I expected them all to play, but I didn't necessarily accept
in that formation. Yeah.
I just think I've heard it on one of the other shows today on Love Sport whether he has to find a way to play Aubameyang through the middle with Lacazette. And I know we've talked about this before because I don't want to go back to a three.
Mm.
But I just think Aubameyang seems happy being wide and coming in.
He's happiest in the middle.
But he's a poacher.
He doesn't want to be there. You could tell, like you said, he's happy enough. He's content. Mm. But after a while, he's not going to want to be there, especially if he's not getting chances. He did expose Davinson Sanchez, by the way, who did not have a good game yesterday.
It's funny that because I saw a tweet from Alistair Gold at Football London. He's a Tottenham correspondent. And he was saying that he thought Davinson Sanchez was one of their four best players, along with Harry Winks and Ericsson and whoever else it was. I can't remember.
Interesting. I don't know. I just think that he was exposed in not being a right back. They've got real problems in that position, as we know. But we're not going to talk too much about Spurs. Just in terms of the substitutions, fellas,
we got a section on Harry Kane being a cheat in the show.
we're definitely going to get onto that. Don't you worry about that. Plenty of opinion on that penalty that wasn't given, of course, correctly not given. But the substitutions, there was a bit of discussion as to why Ozil didn't come on, why Reece Nelson didn't come on. Mkhitaryan obviously did come on, and he's now left the club. Was there sentiment in that, do you think, from Emery? Am I seeing that completely wrong? He's actually brought him on thinking he might impact the game.
I think he must have brought him on to try and impact. If there was sentiment, he would have played Nacho. He didn't. He played Kolasinac.
Well, I don't think there's a reason to bring on Ozil in a wide position. Mm. If he wanted to keep the same formation, Reece Nelson would have been the obvious substitution. You're right, and I have no idea why he brought on Mkhitaryan.
Why does he play Mkhitaryan? Because he possibly thinks Mkhitaryan's the only one that can kind of travel with the ball.
Well, Reece Nelson can travel with the ball,
but Mkhitaryan's supposed to be the player that can travel with the ball. I mean, I was having a discussion with somebody on Twitter a few weeks ago, and they were saying that there's only two players in the team that can carry the ball. That was Iwobi, who's now gone, and Mkhitaryan. So, and he kind of, people see him as the kind of guy that can knit the play together, especially with Aubameyang. You know, so I'm thinking maybe that's the reason why he brought him on instead of Ozil or Nelson. But it just doesn't work. You know, it just, he hasn't worked. It just,
To be honest with you, I actually am disappointed, though, because I really, really was so pleased when we signed Henrik Mkhitaryan. I just think he's such a good player. He has been such a good player. I just don't know what's happened. And I think it's a real, maybe Mourinho ruined him. Typical Man United thing. But then I just really wanted him to succeed so much. Even recently, I still wanted him to succeed. I probably gave up on him at the end of last season.
I gave up on him well before then.
Yeah,
I was never a big
But there's
fan
definitely
of
a player in there. Good luck to him. I hope he does well. I don't think he'll be, he'll be cheered if he came back, I think. I don't think he's unpopular, you know. But
I think it was too early for Ozil to come into the game at that temperature. He's not been seen so far this season. When's the last time he came as an impact sub and impacted a game?
When's the last time he impacted any game, whether he started or came on as a sub?
Well, a couple more points just to end on this opening segment, chaps. You mentioned the penalty. Just your thoughts on that. And I'm presuming neither of you think that it was a penalty. What are your thoughts on that? Because Harry Kane has since come out and said,
Oh, the dive, you mean? I thought you meant the penalty.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the penalty that was given. I thought we were going to talk about Xhaka again.
No. I mean, that alone in itself, no one's conceded more penalties since Granit Xhaka came into the Premier League from his debut. So that speaks for itself.
Really?
A ridiculous sliding tackle in that area. You just don't know what
you
he's thinking.
I was watching the penalty area,
I was watching it back again and again, thinking there must have been a reason. Maybe Son done him a few moments earlier or something like that. He was resting red miss. I just can't fathom why he did that. He wasn't going towards goal. We've all played football at some level or another. I just cannot fathom why he would do that.
I'm still angry with him.
I've got to say, fellas, I did think that you were going to be slightly more upbeat today. What's the feeling like after this draw? Because I sense that you both see it as 2 points dropped.
Honestly thought we were going to win that comfortably. Genuinely did.
Before the game, did you?
Yeah. I was with someone in the pub who put £10 on Pepe to get a hat-trick, and I was considering putting the same bet.
Wow. That's ambitious.
Well, what we were saying is, and I agree, we both agree with this is my friend Woz, that he's going to be a streaky player. So like when Henry didn't score for the first eight games, and then he did, and he never stopped. I just get the feeling when the first one hits the back of the net from Pepe, he's confident he's going to go for it.
I think a lot of people think that.
He could be one of the most exciting players.
Yeah.
Well, he's the first player we've had that is the sort of player that you lean forward in your seat as soon as the ball comes to him.
You get off
like you used to with Rocky back in the days.
I think at the moment we really do depend on the front two. Yeah. If they score, then there's a chance we'll win the game. But what I saw was there's a second layer. In that second half, there's a second layer. I think Pepe is going to rise to the top once he starts scoring. Ceballos, if he stays, just think he needs a little bit of adaptation time. But his energy that he brought onto when he came on, it just lifted the whole place, especially Guendouzi. I think those three players are going to be the players that come up that we will see. They've got the character to grab the game and push the game forward and maybe help the front two in terms of winning games.
Well, if he's going to play the 4-3-3 on an ongoing basis, then Ceballos has to be one of the three.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think if he actually leaves Torreira sitting full time, and when we've got our first choice back four, I think not only will Ceballos score a lot of goals, I think Guendouzi can add goals to his game as well because he gets in the positions. I think you said other players, he covers ground very quickly when he's in full stride.
Yeah, he does. He does.
I'm not going to make the comparison, but long legs.
There's a lot to like about his second half performance. I thought.
He won out of the match, didn't he?
I felt it was, he got what it was about. You know, especially when Dele Alli came on, he was in his face. He was in the Tottenham players' face. He gets it. He's a nuisance. He wants to rile them up. I just thought he understood the concept of the North London derby.
Do you think he's worried, going back to the Xhaka thing, but in the same conversation, if he took Xhaka out and played with Ceballos, Torreira and Guendouzi, our most senior midfield player would be 23.
Yeah, and
that's a young midfield.
And
to compete at the top of the Premier League.
There's not a lot of muscle in that midfield. It's a very creative midfield, but in terms of playing teams like Tottenham, Liverpool, and teams like that, where they're playing full-grown men, it's a bit risky, but
it is. But just, then Shaka's just as risky.
Just lastly on this, one of those midfielders, Lucas Torreira, I don't know whether you noticed when you scored the equaliser, he was completely unmoved in the dugout. I don't know whether you can read anything into this.
Oh, yeah,
Emery's
yeah,
going crazy.
Yeah,
everybody's
yeah.
jumping about. Torreira, not even a sign, didn't even bat an eyelid.
Because he was annoyed to have been taken off.
I would imagine he was annoyed that he'd been
dragged. Because look at the way he reacted after he scored the fourth goal last
exactly.
in December.
Yeah. Didn't bat an eyelid.
No. But I did notice when he's, I was saying at halftime, I mean, even before halftime, change your boots. He must have slipped up about four or five times. I don't know if it was moulded boots or whatever. He was. I don't think he had a great game. I think he deserved to be taken off, actually. I think that was one of his poor games, you know.
Yeah, this is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. We're going to be speaking to Adrian Kajumba of the Daily Mail next. Love Sport. This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Gunnerstown, Dave Seeger and Giles Anyam. Right, I am positively giddy at the fact we've got Adrian Kajumba, Daily Mail football reporter, on the line right now to discuss more about yesterday's North London derby. Adrian, you were at the game yesterday reporting for the Daily Mail. What was it like in that press area? What was the feeling around the stadium?
Well, I mean, it's a North London derby, so, you know, there's that natural buzz whenever this game comes around. And obviously, since Tottenham's rise, if you like, in the last few years, it's become an even bigger fixture, that the two teams are more of an even keel, if you like. And this one, you're going into this game, you couldn't quite call it whenever you come into the North London derby. I think that's what has become clear in the last few years, that whenever you try and predict which way it's going to go, it tends to go the other way. And I think that's what happened a little bit yesterday. You know, Spurs were the ones who came into the game under a little bit of a cloud, as if the way Pochettino has been talking, the issues that have been sort of surrounding them. Arsenal had the home advantage. You see, yesterday was just going to be Arsenal's day. And what happened is Spurs, who went into the 2-0 lead before being pegged back. So it's just a game that is just getting increasingly harder to predict the North London derby. And it did disappoint as well yesterday.
Adrian, it's Dave Seeger here. What was the feeling when you see the team slightly before us probably, but what was the feeling when you saw Emery's selection and he was, well, firstly that he was going to play the big three up front, but also the sort of the three in midfield? Did that surprise you that Ceballos wasn't playing, for example? What was the reaction?
They're the two big issues, as you mentioned there. Exciting to see Pepe Aubameyang either side of Lacazette. But then you did look at that midfield three and you just thought it was maybe just lacking a little bit of creativity there. Maybe slightly different option to what the other two offered. And obviously you see Ceballos when he eventually comes on, he came on. Arsenal had their tails up at that time because Lacazette had equalised just before half time. They had a bit of momentum, but then he lifted them again well and just helped them dominate that, you know, in the period of the game even further before they got the equaliser. So maybe when Emery is reshaping his side as the season goes on, he may look at, if there does come an occasion where he's thinking about that three again, he'll probably remember how maybe it was just that kind of creativity lacking. And that's obviously what they bought Ceballos for. So although he's got, having those top three, your goal threat is there, your attacking threat is there, but what you looked at, or what you thought when you saw that Arsenal team was just, he's actually going to supply them. He's actually going to provide them with the bullets, and that was the problem maybe with the side that he picked at the start.
Adrian, Giles here. Your opinion on Xhaka, what he might have been thinking making that tackle, and basically Emery's sort of defence of him after the game. What are your feelings, your opinions on that?
That tackle. Just puff my cheek. There's so many things wrong with it. Obviously, he got it wrong in the first place. But then if you go back before that, the ball that was played back in, I think, by Son, was actually going backwards. And Sonny tackled. So, you know, Son was going backwards. The whole play was going backwards. You're in the penalty area. You don't need to leave the ground, if you like, make a sided tackle in those circumstances. And the problem with Xhaka, if maybe it was a one-off, maybe let him off. But where he just, I think I saw a stat earlier on about the number of penalties he's given away, more in the Premier League than anyone else since he came to England. You know, it's something, you know, needless, brainless tackles that he keeps doing. You kind of run out of patience, given the benefit of the doubt, and you just think there's something wrong with this guy if he keeps doing this time and time again. He makes his challenges and he's got this sort of look on his face which almost goes, oh, no, I've done it again. Mm. It's almost like he knows when he makes his kind of tackles. Obviously, you know, Emery, there's only so much he can say or is going to say in those circumstances. Xhaka knows he's made a big mistake, and he always does it. He's manager coming out in public, carving him in his own sort of way, Emery, you know, mentioned the word mistake and, you know, not kind of, you know, basically using your head in the right circumstances during a game such as that. So, in as much as he can, he made it clear it was a mistake. Maybe behind closed doors, he'd be saying a lot stronger with Xhaka than what he said publicly.
This season, one thing that struck me, especially the two games against the big teams, is they've been individual errors, and they've been coming from our experienced players. You know, you look at just David Luiz last week, and then this week you've got, I don't know what Sokratis was doing for the first goal. That's a simple shot. It's a simple shout. You know, that's got to be Xhaka's ball. You know, and then obviously you've got Leno spilling the ball as well. I mean, how much does that undermine our sort of, or Emery's kind of game plan?
Well, it does, and it has for a very, very long time at Arsenal. The kind of, you know, lapses at the back that they've had is almost something that they can't shake, almost no matter who's in charge and who are the, you know, the individual personnel making up the defence. Sokratis, I agree. I don't know what he was doing going for that header when there was already, I think it was Xhaka challenging Kane at the time. It was almost like, Kane's my man. I'm the one who's going to win every battle. I'm going to start my authority on this individual duel. But then, you know, he just ended up causing the confusion. David Luiz stepped out at the wrong time as well, again trying to gamble, got it wrong. Spurs get in and score. So, I mean, it's a massive issue. I mean, we were talking last night with some friends and wondering if, you know, you thought coming into the season it's going to be Sokratis plus one at the moment, it ended up being Luiz. And then you think, well, Holding's coming back at some point, so maybe he'll end up being the one who partners Sokratis. But when you look at the mistakes, as you say, those senior players are making, you wonder if it's going to end up being Holding plus one. Mm. Once he comes up, you know, ends up being back fully fit and up and running. In terms of Leno, I mean, Leno kind of gets himself out of jail and, you know, makes amends with a couple of big saves. I think there was talk that he may have slipped for the first one, led gateway. I've not quite seen that before. I just saw talk of it earlier on social media. I think generally, very, very generally, Leno has done very well to almost establish himself as number one. And as I said, he made amends with some of the other saves some other goalkeepers wouldn't be able to make.
One of the things we were talking about just before you came on, Adrian, was that we're slightly concerned that with this sort of ridiculous sort of five captains thing, but we don't really know who the captain is, but he does seem to have wedded himself to Xhaka, and we're almost, we could be another Vermaelen situation where, you know, you make club captain a player who really shouldn't be in the side, and Xhaka might stay on the side, because if he's going to play a three, Torreira for us needs to be the deepest one. He's the most mobile. Yesterday Xhaka was the deepest one, and he's just not, he doesn't understand how to press very well, and he's not press resistant, you know, in that deepest position, which is a concern. But he's wedded to him because he's made him effectively his on-field captain at the moment.
I must admit, I was quite surprised by that when they did line up. When you were looking at the three, I did actually think Torreira was going to be the deepest of the three. You know, Guendouzi on the right and Xhaka on the left-hand side, obviously that's his natural side. But it turned out to be totally different. I think maybe with the five captains, he kind of actually gives himself a little get-out.
Well, Nacho was one, so he's got promoted.
Yeah. So that's one problem. I was on the tour with Arsenal in America during the summer, and we did talk about wanting to have an English player among the five, and obviously naturally you're then thinking that that's going to be Rob Holding. Again, he's still got to come back. Whether Rob Holding will end up being the sort of captain who has the command and respect to that dressing room to take that role this season, maybe too soon, maybe even beyond that too soon. And I think it's notable that he's not actually, when we've been in press conferences and actually quizzed him specifically on the captain, he's not actually said who the number one is, for a start. I believe the programme notes so far have just been sort of word from the dressing room as opposed to captain notes. Mm. I think they're trying to keep it very loose and not actually name anyone specifically as that's the first choice for that group of five. Maybe because he's indecisive. And because he didn't want that situation last year where he had it, and obviously the group ended up falling apart, and then, you know, in the summer he's having to ask questions about what does it mean about the guys you pick, you know, what does it say about the group you picked, and you're making him captain, and then 3 months later they're off.
If you ask the fans, I'll tell you who the fans want. Fans want Hector Bellerin to be captain.
You know, and that's again another issue. You've got to wait for him to come back, and how long is that going to take? I think he's obviously, you know, he had the same injury as Holding, but he's the one who's going to be back later, so that's back and able to play next month. But how long before he's back fully fit and able to play every week? you know, you may not be looking at all realistically end of November, start of December before he's even in a position to do that. But I mean, yeah, you know, you've got Bellerin coming back. It may end up being a situation that's better and resolved next season.
Yeah.
Than it was this season, and they've just got to kind of muddle through in terms of the captaincy.
Adrian, thank you very much for joining us, boss. That was Adrian Kajumba, Daily Mail football reporter, who was at the game yesterday. Interestingly, he did say it's becoming increasingly more difficult to predict what happens in the North London Derby. It is incredibly unpredictable. I think the one thing that we do know is that Spurs have dropped 42 points from winning positions in the Premier League against Arsenal. That's 11 more than against any other side in the competition.
Hey.
So you do have that hold after over them. Of course, they've only won twice at Arsenal in the Premier League. I think once in 27 years, of course, that game in 2010, and the previous one being the inaugural Premier League season. But North London
you
Derby...
You are a font
of information.
The North London Derby is unpredictable. We are going to be talking about that next.
This is Love Sport.
Yep, it's the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from Gunnerstown, Dave Seeger and Giles Anyam. We've got about 28 minutes of the show left to go. Now, the North London Derby is an incredibly unpredictable beast. The argument or the debate has arisen, chaps, as to what is the best derby in the Premier League at present. Now, when we're talking about derbies, I don't want to touch on rivalries. I don't want to go to Palace, Brighton. I don't want to go to Manchester United and Liverpool because they're not local derbies. In terms of local derbies, you've got the Manchester derby, you've got the Merseyside derby, you've got the North London derby. You could squeeze Wolves and Villa in there, but in terms of
Birmingham
local derbies,
Villa's the real.
It is, yeah, I know. But two like Midlands-based clubs, you could kind of say that is a derby, and it will be fierce when they play each other. But the North London derby is out there, right? Streets ahead of the rest at the moment.
In terms of entertainment, as you say, unpredictability. I can't remember the last time we've had a really poor North London derby. You know, it doesn't need. It doesn't.
Well,
need
it wasn't poor from out. I think when Rizicky scored, it was 1-0, and we just defended for 90 minutes.
Yeah, but that was quite an intense game. That was that was an intense game.
But the 2-5-2s were probably two of the best games I've ever been to.
The 4-4 was.
Oh my god!
Do you know what I mean? You know, so
I was in the queue for the tube. We were 4-2 up because I had a really young son with me. Well, I'm not bothered about missing two. So we were 4-2 up, and I was in the queue at Arsenal, and you could hear it. It was like Highbury. I could hear it. What was that? And everyone's like, "Oh my god, they've got a third one." 30 seconds later, now they're. Oh my God, they've equalised.
We're buzzing. Yeah. We're buzzing.
Yeah, we're buzzing. We've got a two-hour journey home. Oh, God.
Good on David Bentley. I think there was the clash in the early noughties, or well, around 2004 as well, wasn't there? Was it 5-3, 5-4 at White Hart Lane?
Yeah.
That was the one at White Hart Lane when Adebayor scored that sort of bicycle kick.
Yeah.
The edge.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Now, there have been some absolute humdingers.
Real humdingers.
And what Giles was saying, it's true. A lot of the Man City, Man United ones haven't been great of recent years. There was the Rooney overhead kick one. That was a great
and
one.
The 6-1.
And then, there's been a few. But the other one, certainly they get this huge build-up for Everton, Liverpool. And back maybe 5-10 years ago, you know, when it was the Gerrard, Carragher, Murphy time, there were some crackers then. But I can't really remember too many brilliant Everton-Liverpool games in recent years. Maybe 1-0 and a sending off is pretty much par for the course in that one. So it's, definitely we've had the excitement in our one.
Yeah, producer Josh just said when Michael Owen scored the winner in the Manchester derby. Fair comment, but that was 2009, so a long, long time ago now when you think about it, like 10 years ago, in fact, almost to the day, I would imagine. But you're right, I think in terms of competition, it's you just don't know what the game's going to bring, and it is so fierce, and the rivalry is so strong, and the fact that the two teams are so close, now I can say that without you getting angry, I mean, they are so close.
And it's different when Man United are so far behind Man City,
and that's
and
the
Everton
thing.
Are so far behind Liverpool.
And there you go.
I was having a go at you then, you didn't rise at all, did you?
No, at all, because it's absolutely true. They are. The two Manchester clubs are poles apart. Everton are poles apart from Liverpool. Everton seem to be improving this season, but they're still way off where they are. So those two derbies, whilst you like to think, oh, okay, something might happen in this game, invariably it doesn't. It goes the way you expect it to go. Like you said, you expected Arsenal to win this one, and before you know it, you're 2-0 down.
Yeah, but we were last year as well. We were down last year.
4-2-1
we were
down.
We were down 2-0 in the 5-2.
Yeah.
So the first 5-2 anyway. So
I just want to quickly touch on Bernd Leno as well, because a lot of people have
been
talking.
You know more about goalkeeping than us.
But. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm interested to hear your views because the stats did come out as soon as that first goal went in. Highest number of errors leading to goals in the Premier League since last season. Arsenal are the highest team at 13. Leno is the highest player at 6. I'm not having that as an error.
No, I think you've got to excuse keepers. I think I think you've got two excuse keepers. It's different from, I mean, they're, it's a specialist position, you know. It depends on the quality of shot, you know, the angle. There's so many factors and variables in that come, for me, that come into play that, you know, they're going to make errors, or they're going to, you know, you might miss the odd one through the legs, or, you know, there's too many variables for me to say that he's a weakness. You know, I think generally, if you're facing 20 shots a game, which he did last season, you know, yeah, you're going to, you know, the law of probability says that you're going to...
I'd also say he's saved us a lot of points, yeah, as well as he might have let in a few goals, but he's made some miraculous saves.
Without
in
a shadow
game.
Of a doubt.
He's one of the most agile shot stoppers in the Premier League for me at the moment.
There was an utterly ridiculous report in the Mirror yesterday about the seven things we learned from the North London Derby. You know, those classic kind of articles, clickbait and all the rest of it, which claimed that the Arsenal coaching staff probably cannot wait to get rid of Bernd Leno. That Jens Lehmann, they probably are hoping, even though Jens Lehmann was such a rash character, that they'd love someone like him in goal at the moment because of Bernd Leno's errors that he seems to be doing. Like I said, that is subjective.
Who wrote that?
I don't know the name of the chap, to be fair. I didn't get that far.
What is your opinion on goalkeepers and errors and that sort of thing?
Well, in terms of that particular incident, no, I don't think that's an error. Like you said, it can only be subjective. If that first goal goes in, if the first shot from Eric Lamela goes in, yes, I'm saying that's potentially an error. But when you look where Bernd Leno was and the fact that he was backpedalling, he was off balance. So to then have to dive to your right when you're slightly off balance, and you can see the way his left leg sort of cocks out slightly, he's slightly off balance. And all the calls, especially from the pundits and the co-commentary, Gary Neville saying he's got to parry that away. Sol Campbell, he's got to parry that away. When there's no power like there wasn't on Eric Lamela's shot, it's very difficult to parry that away.
I heard Richard talking about it on Breakfast this morning.
Oh, there you go.
Who should know? And he said exactly the same.
Yeah, absolutely. And we spoke about it earlier, to be fair. And it's just impossible. And yes, could he have gathered it? Yes, he could have gathered it. But it was, and some goalkeepers probably could. But you're talking top end goalkeepers. The majority of goalkeepers in the Premier League right now wouldn't have been able to have collected that cross. So, like you said, a number of variables. Had a defender been following it in with Christian Eriksen, they would have cleared it. So it's not an error. And if Bernd Leno has conceded five errors before that, he should stick on five, because that is not an error in my book whatsoever.
That's interesting, because I did put it down as an error from him, but listening to your, I know, I have to listen back to Richard Lee's comments as well, then yeah, I agree with you. You know, my initial thought was he was a bit leaden-footed, like he was a bit, you know, I don't know what, he just didn't have no power.
His position was wrong, starting position.
Well, as he's set, he's diving back on himself. So he's backpedalling. So when he's set, he's diving. So it's very difficult to then generate the momentum to get down to your right to collect that and hold it. Obviously, I think that's what he was trying to do, but it just slipped out of his grasp. So partly a mistake, but definitely not like a full-on error leading to a goal.
Yeah, but no one was tracking Eriksen, you're right. And that's schoolboy.
Yeah, absolutely. You did mention Richard Lee, who does host our breakfast show on Breakfast this morning. They spoke to James Benge, senior writer for Football.London. We referenced Matteo Guendouzi earlier. He said not many better midfielders are in the Premier League right now.
I think it's really worth noting, I know I mentioned him just back then, but how fantastic Matteo Guendouzi has been. I think a 20-year-old, he's only played sort of 50-odd games for Arsenal. Before that, he was playing in the French second tier. And right now, I don't think there are many better midfielders than him in the Premier League. I think he showed what he can do in attack with that pass over the top for Aubameyang's goal. And there are so many other things as well. A really fantastic player, and he's got the lot.
Now, I like those quotes from James. I do think they're slightly controversial. Not many other better midfielders in the Premier League right now. Would you agree with that?
I say under 21s.
There certainly aren't many better 20-year-old ones.
Yeah. In terms of midfielders as a whole, you've got the Man City, but you've got Liverpool. But it's a bit. I like James. You know, for me, I wouldn't say he's one of the best. There's not many better in the Premier League. I think there are a few.
I'll revise his quote, and when I see James, I'll tell him there aren't many central midfielders in the league with a higher ceiling than Matteo Guendouzi would be the right statement. I think that's
so
true.
Potential.
Yeah.
I think also they did a study or research last season of the under 23 in Europe. He was one of the top, I think. I can't remember.
Well, there was rumours that PSG would be willing to spend $70 million
in
the summer.
There was, yeah.
You know, that is crazy money.
Excuse me?
Yeah. PSG were rumoured to be considering a £70 million bid for Guendouzi.
£70 million.
That's how good people think he's going
to
be.
Wow. I heard that Arsenal would only consider an astronomical amount to really
rate him. Wow. Well, you can fit. I mean, look, you've got to look at the situation. He was on the under 21 duty, same as other players who are on international duty. Torreira's eased back in. Other players are eased back in. Guendouzi's in the first game. He's barely played pre-season. Emery wants him in the team.
Yeah.
You know, he loves him. And you can see why. He's got everything. He's just so athletic. He is, he's, the only thing is, and Charlie, who's on this show, you know Charlie, his dad, he's a coach, and his dad, Mark's a coach. I was with Mark, his dad, at the weekend, and he was saying, what he's got to iron out is his body shape. Mm. He doesn't receive the ball. He's not in the right position quite often, so he doesn't turn the right way. He has to adjust before he can start doing something.
So he should be on a half turn sort of thing.
It's a slight thing, he said, but it's easily coachable. But the way he travels with the ball, he's got an eye for a pass. He does, given how young he is, I don't know how many times he's been booked in an Arsenal shirt. Yeah. He doesn't make crazy rash challenges like Xhaka. You know, and
what I liked, I was saying to you off air, is like he did an interview on Arsenal.com earlier on, a few days before the clash, and he was saying he's got that self-awareness to know where his deficiencies are, what he needs to work on, and a lot of the kids do praise Unai Emery and the coaches for that kind of working with them and trying to get the most out of them. And I think that in 2 or 3 years' time, you know, the more games he gets, the more power he as he grows into a man, the more powerful he becomes. He's going to be one of the top players in the Premier League and possibly in Europe if he goes on the way he's coming.
I agree.
It's interesting you mentioned Charlie East, because he was quite vociferous last week, suggesting that Guendouzi was not a player, wouldn't be the complete midfielder at Arsenal that, like you're saying, a lot of people think he will be.
Humble pie, Charlie.
And Didier Deschamps obviously rates him as well, because he's brought him in to the squad to replace
Paul
Pogba.
There's a man who knows a little bit about playing midfield.
Mm. Absolutely. The water carrier himself. He's going to play in those games against Albania and Andorra, I believe. In terms of the French setup, you think he's ready for that?
Well, I think he's been promoted from the under-21s due to somebody being injured, hasn't he? So he wasn't going to be in the squad.
Paul Pogba's out, yeah.
Yeah, so he's been... Oh, crikey. There's some shoes to fill.
Mm. Well, for France.
Well, if they're both friendlies as well, aren't they? So he will probably get some minutes. He'll get a chance.
And it's
to
good
prove.
For him to be in that company.
Yeah, because there's some World Cup winning players. Exactly. The majority of them probably World
and
Cup
he,
winning
and
players.
And he seems inspired by being around really good. I mean, he loves being with, you know, Lacazette and Oberon, and I'm sure with the French team, with all those World Cup winners, it's something to aspire to. It's inspirational. Do you know what I mean? He's like a little kid, isn't he?
Yeah, there was a great tweet I saw today where being around, you say about being around Lacazette and particularly Aubameyang, when he turned up at Arsenal, he was in, like, you know, that Adidas t-shirt, 2 for £15 from Sports Direct, and a crappy old tracksuit. Today, when he turned up at Clairefontaine, he had a Dolce & Gabbana, black shiny thing. He's just spending time with Aubameyang.
He's been Aubameyang.
He has been a Aubameyang, definitely.
What they're saying that is.
Yeah. But no, he's a super confident young man, but not overconfident, as you say. He's aware of his limitations. He's aware he needs to work on things. And I just think, you're right, Giles, I think he's got such a high ceiling. Mm.
Where does he rank, do you think, in terms of youngsters that have come through at the club?
Well, he hasn't come through.
Sorry, not come through, youngsters that are at the club.
I think he's got a ways to go to be anywhere near Cesc Fabregas. Cesc Fabregas was unique, wasn't he? Really,
one of the best players I've ever seen in an Arsenal.
You've seen Liam Brady come through the ranks. You've seen lots of really, really. I mean, Rocastle. You know,
all right. I'm old. Okay, I'm old. We understand. I think it's just something infectious about him. It's just he's always on the front foot, always looking to go forward, and you know, that's what you like. You know, if you're a central midfield player, I think the traditional box-to-boxer, like a Frank Lampard, they're not around much anymore. Mm. Everyone has to have he's defensive, or he's a cam, or whatever. I just think Guendouzi is an all-round box-to-box midfield player in an era where there aren't many of those around. Mm. You know, there are not many box-to-box midfield players in the old sense, like a Gerrard or a Lampard, and he is that type of player. Yeah. Mm. What he needs to, obviously, add is goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Indeed, he does. Right, we're going to be talking transfers next on the Arsenal Fan Show.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Arsenal Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Biddle, here with the guys from Gunners Town, Giles Anyam and Dave Seager. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes left of the show. And fellas, it's happened. One of the most abominable of exchanges in football history is over. 18 months later, Serie A have swooped for the swappers. Henrik Mkhitaryan and Alexis Sanchez are plying their trade in Italy. Mkhitaryan leaving for Roma on a season-long loan deal today.
Difference is, Man United are still paying most of Alexis's wages and they can buy him for $2 million. Mkhitaryan, they're paying his wages. And also, I noticed, I think someone saw a funny tweet earlier. Alexis scored 5 goals in 50-odd games. Mkhitaryan actually scored 9 and 10 assists. So it wasn't, statistically, he actually wasn't the disaster perhaps some fans thought he was.
Oh, no, he was.
He did them all in that one game. That first game against Everton, he had like four assists and 2 goals
crazy,
or something,
wasn't
didn't
it? And you all thought, oh, hang on a second. Yeah, Arsenal done well here. And all United fans thought, that's exactly what we thought, or we knew that was capable within Mkhitaryan, but obviously Jose Mourinho just battered him into the ground.
Charlie obviously knows people at Colney and that, and he said that someone was standing next to Wenger. He said this on the show, didn't he? That when he signed the first day at Colney, Wenger just turned around to this person and said, Rolls Royce of a footballer. He said it in a French accent. But no, that, I mean, Wenger thought, because he wanted him before he went to Man United.
Yeah.
God knows what happened to him.
Mm. It's a shame, right? Because
he's a likeable chap.
Yeah, he is, and he dreamed of playing in the Premier League. He did a great article with the Players' Tribune, I think, when he first joined Manchester United, and he said how much of a dream it was for him to play in the Premier League. And with regards to the swap deal itself, we love a swap deal. Yeah. And you thought of Cole and Gallas and Matic and Luiz between Chelsea and Benfica and Ian Wright and some weights with Greenwich Borough back in the day. But those swap deals were great. And it was quite exciting, really, that this swap deal was happening, regardless of the fact that there was so much money involved with Alexis Sanchez's wages at Manchester United. But you thought, here we go, it's an old-fashioned swap deal. It just hasn't worked out. Just sad.
And it's funny that they're both going to be playing against each other in Italy. I mean, yeah, I was... By the time Alexis Sanchez had to leave, I reconciled in my mind that, okay, he had to leave. I didn't want him to leave originally because I just thought that we lacked that kind of player.
But I think it's easy to be, oh, yeah, you're just Arsenal fans just saying that. But I think most of us had seen the turn in form. You know, I think we all thought the fact that he hadn't signed a contract, he only knows how to play at 100 miles an hour, so it wasn't going to make any difference. But it did make a difference. And his selfishness got worse and worse. His passing, his distribution, everything about him.
He checked out the tail end
of the last season, and then up till January, we were relieved to see him go. And Man United fans seemed to be delighted because they were thinking of the Sanchez who played the three previous seasons. Yeah. He wasn't that player when you signed
Footballed
him.
Footballed out.
Yeah. Although he did play quite well for Chile this summer, I understand.
The thing about Mkhitaryan is, for the kind of player he is, what he produced was what you expect a youngster to produce.
Yeah.
You know, one good game, then kind of peaks and troughs, and then maybe kind of goes off the boil or whatever. He never produced that consistency. All I wanted was 7s out of 10s every week. I never got that.
Maybe.
There was a spell when he came back from injury, wasn't there? When he really played quite well.
That first game last season that we lost to Chelsea. Him and Iwobi wide, got something here. That looked really good. But I just think maybe he's the sort of player who needs to be playing in the same position every single week and know he's going to play every single week. Some players do. Some players need that arm around them. You're going to be playing on the right of a three every single week.
Yep, indeed. You know. Well, here we are, fellas, on the 2nd of September. The European transfer window due to close very soon. You'd imagine there'll be no more business. Kelechi and Wakali, have gone to Huesca.
But
when we look at the business now, are you happy with that in terms of the outgoings? Iwobi, Bielik, Koscielny, Ospina, Jenkinson, Asano, Monreal, Connor Cohen-Bramwell's obviously gone. Lichtsteiner, Welbeck, Ramsey,
Elneny
today as well. Eddie Nketiah obviously on loan, but interestingly doing quite well at Leeds.
Yes, dialing him up if you want to go. I was looking. Somebody put up the 2017 Cup final team. I think it might have been Matt Law, and I think only Ozil and one other player holding, but he's injured, and possibly Bellerin maybe. There's only three players remaining from that team from 2 years ago. So in 26 months, it's a high turnover, real high turnover.
But also, someone tweeted today, I think it's like ridiculous amount of money off the wage bill.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, crazy.
About 700K or something.
Yeah, I think we saw 900,000. Yeah. But the thing is, what we now know is, if we're there or thereabouts in January, what we now know as a club is, we will be able to go out and strengthen if we need to.
Yeah.
And we will. We've seen that. The way that Raul's Sanielli, or I never know how to pronounce it, is working. We're gonna do business in January if we need to. And I think that's a confidence thing now. Yeah. If we can get holding Bellerin and Tierney in the side by let's just be conservative, mid to late October, and we're in the top four at January, we can go out and strengthen to go three, get third place, I think. And I'm not sure that we would have thought we'd be in that position. It's phenomenal, the amount of business we've done. Because there's nobody, Nacho's the only one I'm thinking, oh, that's a shame. Because I just think he's better than Kolasinac. I'd rather have Nacho as a substitute left back than Kolasinac.
Will he get a send-off, do you think, at some point? Like a goodbye?
I thought it would have been on Sunday.
I think we wanted to keep him for Sunday's game and Sociedad. There's rumours, because what's strange, a lot of fans are saying, well, hold on a second, why do we make such a fuss about getting a fee for Koscielny, and yet we've let Nacho go for a packet of nachos? But it's because I believe we've been given a
first refusal
on two of their young players.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So that's interesting. But Nacho's been, honestly, he's been our most consistent player year in, year out for a long time.
Yeah.
Mr. Consistent.
Yeah. Unsung
hero.
And just before we go, chaps, in terms of the position that you mentioned, Dave, that you're in now, the top two, Liverpool, Man City, streets ahead of the rest. But in terms of the best of the rest, are Arsenal there?
I think we're in with a big shout.
If we don't, I think it's Emery would go. Because they've given him everything to compete for third or fourth. If we don't finish in the Champions League, he won't be here next year. But I genuinely think third is there for us.
Yeah.
Because I think Spurs have got problems. Pochettino's obviously not happy. His body language is awful. You know, whatever's happened with Eriksen, there's no relationship there at all. He's got no relationship with their best defender. Alderweireld's on a free at the end of the season, so they'll probably have to sell him at Christmas to get something. So they're not in a great shape. Man United, they've left themselves very light, I think, on the bench. You know, Arsenal's bench is still strong. I think Man United, you know, when I look at the central midfield players at the club, I think, you know, Fred's still there. What does he do? You know, Matic, he's old. You know, it's not looking great. McTominay's a good player. Pereira's a good player, but there's not a lot of, you know, it doesn't frighten me. And Chelsea, obviously, we know Chelsea's problems. So, we should be. I never thought I'd be saying this in May, but
We're in with a show. We're firmly in the discussion for top three, top four. And if we don't, as Dave said, then that rolling contract will end at the end of the season.
Yeah, Leicester's the one I think are going to be in and amongst it.
Yeah, they will definitely challenge.
And they've got a good squad now.
They've got a very good squad, a hungry squad as well. I think that's the important thing. And that's what Arsenal have got now as well. We go back to Guendouzi. There are hungry players there that want to perform at the highest level.
And you've got young players who are good enough and want to play. And Nelson, if he gets a chance. Martinelli, if he gets a chance. Willock has already proven if he gets a chance.
Yes,
Smith Rowe to come back, although I understand people are a bit concerned that he's lost something in his injury. I was talking to Tim Stillman, actually, in the tube, and he went to the under-23 game. He just said he looked like he just wasn't up with the pace of the game at all.
Really?
Looked like he'd lost a yard of pace, which is worrying. But yeah, a lot of good young players.
There's a pathway now for these guys to sort of make a name for themselves.
There is a massive pathway for these guys to make a name for themselves. This has been the Arsenal Fan Show on Lost Sport. The guys from Gunnerstown, fellas, it's been nothing but a pleasure as always. Giles Anyam and Dave Seager.
Thank you, Matt.
I've been Matt Beadle, and I will be back very shortly because we've got the Brentford Fan Show with the guys from Besotted coming up next.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.